Hey there, it's Jim Stengel, host of the CMO Podcast. We're all marketers here, so let's be real for a sec. We all know that your website shouldn't be a static asset. It should be a dynamic part of your strategy to build your brand and drive conversions. That's marketing 101. But 54% of marketing leaders say web updates take too long. That's over half of you listening right now. And that's where Webflow comes in. Their visual-first platform allows you to build, launch, and optimize web pages fast. That means you can set ambitious marketing goals and your site can rise to that challenge. Learn why teams like Dropbox, IDEO, and Orange Theory all trust Webflow to achieve their most ambitious goals today at webflow.com. What's the first brand you remember making an impact on you as a young girl?
Benetton. They were the first brand that was inclusive enough to represent me. Growing up in the 80s, when fashion and beauty images were fairly homogenous, they were able to glamorize inclusivity and belonging. And I think for that reason, it was before its time. The other thing that I, you know, learned from a brand like Benetton is, you know, you can really make an impact by doing things differently. And that's something that, you know, I still hold dear to my heart and is part of my ethos.
Hi, I'm Jim Stengel, and I help major brands find their purpose and activate it, and the profits follow. For 7 years, I was the global marketing officer for Procter & Gamble, where I oversaw the marketing of hundreds of brands. You may not know it, but the CMOs, the chief marketing officers of all of your favorite brands, are trying to connect you with your favorite products and services through purpose. And on this show, I delve into how they do it.
My guest today in the CMO Podcast is Natalie Sunderland, the Global Head of Marketing and Communications at the Bank of New York Mellon, or BNY Mellon. This is definitely the oldest company we have had on this show. BNY Mellon was established in 1784 by Alexander Hamilton, and it was the first company listed on the New York Stock Exchange. BNY Mellon is not only old, but it is big. Nearly $48 trillion in assets under custody and or administration. Yes, old and big, but also admired. In 2024, it was one of Fortune's most admired companies, scoring high in innovation and people management. We'll talk about that. My guest Natalie is Canadian by birth, studied at Queen's University in Ontario, and joined American Express shortly after college. She stayed at Amex for 14 years before moving to Citi for a few years. Then she made a big jump in her career and life, moving to California from New York and joining the startup world. Natalie worked at two fintech startups and one young healthcare company. In 2021, she decided to join BNY Mellon. We'll talk about all of this and how she leads a happy life with three kids and two dogs and a cross-country commute. This is my conversation with Natalie Sunderland.
Natalie, welcome to the CMO Podcast. We're breaking a record today on the CMO Podcast. We're coming up on our 300th episode this summer, but you are the oldest company that we have talked to on this show.
Oh, wow.
You're what, 240 years old this year?
It's our 240th anniversary. That's right.
So almost as old as the United States itself.
That's right. And founded by Alexander Hamilton. And of course, we also have Andrew Mellon, part of our distinguished legacy as well. So lots of folks who helped build the country and what it is today.
Absolutely. Well, how are you celebrating 240 years old this year?
Well, we actually have a whole year of festivities planned. We're trying to really use this as an opportunity to highlight what our clients have done with us, as opposed to really focusing on ourselves and what our employees have done to contribute to the financial system, this economy that we've built together. We have Community Month starting next week. We're engaging our employees around the world, more than 50,000, in contributing to communities and giving back. So we're excited about that. We have a couple of big client engagement programs coming up in May. One of the things I'm most excited about is we're doing a global bell ringing in June, and we'll be celebrating on the floors of New York Stock Exchanges with our clients around the world.
Oh, wow.
So a number of different activations, but ultimately it really is a storytelling opportunity, an opportunity for employees to really connect with all that we've built together and for clients to also better understand what we can do, what we've done with them, not just in the past, but in the future as well.
Now, do you keep an archives? I worked at P&G for many years. P&G is about 180 plus years old, so not quite as old as BNY Mellon, but we had an amazing archives, and it was so much fun to go down there and look at all the stuff from the history of the company, which was kind of a history of America, to be honest with you. So do you all keep an archive?
We do. We do have an archive. We've got a curator who takes good care of our artifacts. We've got Fujio coins. We've got artifacts from the founding of the bank, from the founding of the treasury. So it's actually quite interesting. As a matter of fact, one of our client events will be featuring our artifacts. But, you know, the other thing that I think often about, Jim, is, yes, we've got artifacts from the past 240 years, but it's just as relevant and important to keep the artifacts of today, because given the fact that this company has been around as long as it has, I'd really like to preserve the little decisions that we're making now that may not quite seem as consequential as they will seem perhaps 50, 100, 150 years from now. So I really do see our team is helping to make sure that we can tell the story in the future as well, and hopefully help our future selves out.
All right, we're going to shift right now to also a really interesting piece of history, and that is your career path. And I find it unusual and interesting, and I want to kind of start there. You studied commerce at Queen's University in Canada and somehow ended up in marketing in the United States. So tell us that story. Why marketing, and why did you come down to the States to do that?
I'll share a couple of anecdotes. I think really early on, even when I was studying, I think I learned or realized, I think initially it was a little bit more intuitive versus now it's a bit more purposeful. But I realized that marketers, our job is to create markets. And that's fun. I remember one of the projects I did was on boy bands and the fact that they were serving an unmet need, particularly in the 90s when parents might have been thinking a little bit about how to make sure that, you know, their kids had good influences in their lives. You know, I've always thought that marketing was super fun and I really liked to create and innovate, and it was a path to that. And in terms of being here in the States, I had a tremendous opportunity through American Express. I spent many years working there, and it's such a great company that creates career mobility opportunities, global career mobility opportunities. And I had an opportunity to, you know, make the leap, move to New York, and really through that, try my hand at a number of different things that made me a better marketer. I was part of a startup. We built an online bank. I ran product development for many years. So that's what ultimately led me here. And I think ultimately the amount of innovation and opportunity in the States is what keeps me here.
What about creating markets is interesting to you? I agree with you. That is that's something that marketing does that I don't think anyone else in the corporation really focuses on as much. And when you do that, it's really an incredible experience. So why do you think you enjoyed that so much?
As marketers, Jim, we sit at the intersection of market trends, what's going on the market today and tomorrow. We sit real close to the client and client insights, right? We have to know the client. What are their needs? What are their pains? How can we help? Mm-hmm. Which leads us to value propositions. And then we have to know our business as well, right? How do we make money as a company? And when you bring those three things together, it's a massive commercial opportunity when you hit that sweet spot. And that to me is what's fun, actually being able to create a really compelling commercial impact for the company. And that's honestly what I love about the role here at BNY Mellon. We sit across the enterprise, we work across all of our business lines, and we are helping our clients with an unmet need, which is they want to do more business with us. Therefore, how can we help them better understand the ways that we can be more for them and do more with them?
Well, you just rattled through a wonderful definition of marketing. And I think if everyone saw it that way in all companies, I think we would have a much stronger discipline. But I still find that the image of marketing is too often communications and media, advertising, sponsorships, all important, but it doesn't start there. Those are activations of what you just described.
Exactly. And one of the reasons why I love my role here at BNY Mellon and why I'm really grateful to be here is our marketing and communications organization actually brings all those things together. So when I first arrived, the organization had been somewhat decentralized, but there was a recognition that marketing and communications could actually play a more meaningful role in helping the enterprise overall by bringing all of these things together. So we have our corporate marketing organization, our line of business marketing, which is focused on demand generation and raising the profile of our businesses and the go-to-market strategies. And we also have our communications team. We also actually have our employee value proposition team as well. Again, a recognition that, you know, by bringing all of these various pieces together, we can actually create a bigger impact, not just for the various business units and the products, but actually for the enterprise. So it's been a lot of fun.
You spent 14 years at American Express, which is a bit like P&G. It's a leadership academy. It sends so many amazing leaders throughout the organization and also outside the organization. I'd like you to talk about your 14 years there in terms of what leader or what leaders had the largest impact on your early development as the leader you are today.
Well, I have to say Ken Chenault.
Who was the CEO for many years.
He was the CEO for many years. Al Kelly,
yeah,
iconic leader who taught us servant leadership. Elizabeth Rutledge was actually somebody that I worked for a long time ago, who is now CMO today.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a few things that I learned from all of them. Again, number one, understand your clients. And again, that ties into what we do at BNY Mellon, right? Our job is to be client obsessed. And I'm glad I had a foundation at American Express that taught me what it actually means to be client obsessed. And I'll share this example. There isn't a single conversation that I remember having at American Express over the course of my 14-year career that didn't include the words, what does this mean for the card member? Every conversation, whether it was a finance conversation or a risk conversation or a service or thinking about the value proposition for the gold card refresh,
mm-hmm,
always included the words, what does this mean for a card member? And so that has been a big influence on me. I'd say the other important influence, again, coming back to Al and to a great extent Ken as well, is what it actually means to be a leader. And Al Kelly, I think, is a great example of servant leadership. He really demonstrated that our role as leaders is to teach others how to thrive together. And the importance of role modeling, the great qualities of leadership. And frankly, that, you know, our jobs as leaders isn't just to help deliver great work, but it is to create the culture underneath us as well.
Now, you left Amex and went to Citi for a couple of years, and then you made a big move and went to California, and you worked for, I think, two or three startups over the course of whatever, 10 years or so. So take us back 10 or 11 years ago when you made that decision to leave a large global enterprise and take a major change in, I suspect, lifestyle, kind of work you were doing, kind of organization you were in. So tell us about that decision and what was going on in your head at that time.
Maybe I'll just first share that the decision to make that kind of move certainly required some risk taking.
Mm-hmm.
It required the support of my husband, my partner. And frankly, I will just say that, you know, it's Women's History Month, and I know you've got a lot of female listeners.
Yeah.
I will attribute much of my career success to having a really great partner who has been very supportive of my career. And I don't think I could have done that without him. But I'd say another big factor is mentorship and frankly, sponsorship, which is a little different than mentorship. Having someone who could see what I was capable of and making a bet on me. And actually, I end up in California because somebody that I worked with, saw what I was capable of. And I think one of the things that some companies here in New York don't appreciate quite as much, or at least back then, now I think they do, is something that's appreciated in tech, which is a growth mindset, which means you don't necessarily have to have done everything that you need to do, but do you stay curious? Do you learn? Are you resilient? Do you tackle challenges you've never tackled before? And do you do that in a thoughtful way? And so I'm grateful that somebody saw that in me and took somebody who had spent most of her career in financial services to work for a B2B tech startup selling digital health in California. And as a result, it was truly one of the best experiences of my career. And I will say that being out here in California where I am today, having worked for three startups has taught me again resilience and innovation and really helped me understand the value of a growth mindset.
We've all been there. You spend millions of dollars each year driving traffic to your company's website, and then the results come in and they're just not what you hoped. On top of that, 81% of marketing leaders say website ownership is a challenge. So what do? Well, you switch to Webflow. Let me tell you why. Webflow's visual-first platform empowers your team to own your company's most valuable dynamic marketing asset, your website. From launching a new site to optimizing for SEO and conversions, Webflow gives you the tools you need to drive business growth fast. Unlock your website's full potential when you build, manage, and host with Webflow. Get started today at webflow.com. So how are you this idea of having a growth mindset, being curious, agile, learning, resilience? How, as you look back on it, I mean, you were away from the big company. We'll talk about your decision to come to be in Y Mellon in a minute. But how are you a different leader as you re-entered a large global enterprise after spending those formative years at three different high growth companies?
I guess what I would say, Jim, is that in terms of the re-entry, it wasn't quite as challenging as I expected it to be. And I'll tell you why. BNY Mellon is actually going through a tremendous transformation as a company. We're transforming how we run our company. We're transforming our culture. We're transforming the solutions that we offer our clients so that we can be more for them. And to me, that actually felt more akin to being in a startup, or as akin to being in a startup, as the three other companies that I helped build. And frankly, one of the exciting things about working here at BNY Mellon is that every one of us, every one of us, 50,000 people here in the company, have an opportunity to contribute to something bigger than ourselves. I tell my team every single day, we have an opportunity to leave our fingerprints on this company. And that's what working in startups is. And I think coming into BNY Mellon, recognizing that anyone can spark progress. If you see a problem, you run to it, you go for it. We are owners, just like in startups as well. You're a shareholder there. We're all shareholders here. And it's our responsibility to actually turn this company into what we envision it to be. And so it actually hasn't been that different. I will say there are more people for sure, but I certainly feel the same level of ownership as a full stack marketer and as a shareholder of the company as I did in the startups that I worked for.
Did you have a feeling for all of that 2.5 years ago when you decided to come to BNY Mellon? I mean, did you?
100%. And I've said before that in some ways, it was a risk coming back to a large company. I've shared this before in other conversations that folks in startup land told me, you'll never be able to recruit. You'll never get anything done. You won't have anything to show for the time that you spend. And I would say that, and if anybody is listening, you know, this is a little bit of a recruiting plug, but
go for it.
This is a really unique company. And I knew that our executive committee was bringing me on and other talent on to really take this company to the next level and really help it achieve all of its potential. And I'll say that not only do I feel that it hasn't disappointed, I'll actually say that it's 100% exceeded my expectations.
Well, listen, you were, I've heard you speak in other venues about how you see your work, and you already talked a little bit about your definition of marketing, but I love how you talk about, you think everything starts with a specific business challenge or a problem, and you let that challenge or problem define your role and your work and your organization, which I think is a beautiful way to approach any job, really, and especially, I think, in the marketing discipline. Could you speak a little bit about how you developed that philosophy?
Again, I think it comes back to my past working at American Express, as well as working in startups. And at Amex, similar to, I imagine, to P&G, you're not marketer. It's right. not a cosmetic exercise. You're a GM.
Yep.
And so you have to understand your P&L, you have to understand the business problem, and then you have to figure out the tools, you know, what tools do you have available to solve that problem? And again, same thing in startups, right? The second company I worked for, I was employee number 15. So my job isn't just simply to drive demand or establish the brand, it's to build a company. And so I'd say I have that same ethos here, and I encourage my team to have the same ethos here. And frankly, one of our principles, our cultural principles, is own it. You see a problem, you run to it. And I think for that reason, there's a lot of opportunity for any individual who wants a role where they aren't being put in a box. And I think that's the opportunity. And frankly, when I think about folks who are in early, even mid stages of their careers, trying to get as many experiences as possible so that you can continue to grow, you can continue to thrive. So that's what makes this kind of environment really interesting.
I've heard you talk about one of the specific problems you're working on at BNY Mellon is kind of a simple one, but a fundamental one. That's making customers, clients aware of who you are and what you do. And you don't have a giant marketing budget, right? You're not P&G. So I'd like you to talk a bit about how do you shift someone's awareness of who you are and what you do without an enormous amount of marketing money? Where do you start? How do you think about it? How do you measure progress? So could you speak a bit about that process you're going through?
Jim, when I joined the company, it was pretty apparent early on that we had all of the ingredients that we needed to be successful. And I think starting with that, as we looked at the business problem, was important. There wasn't anything fundamentally flawed with our brand. In fact, what we heard from our clients is, we actually want to do more with you. Just help us understand how you can help us. Mm-hmm. So great, right? We're starting from a position of strength. However, we're a B2B company in financial services, and for that reason, hadn't had a whole lot of reason to be out in the world talking a whole lot about us, but we realized that that had to change. So we did our brand study, and we learned that people know who we are, they're aware of us, but what they really needed to understand is what we could do to help them. So that's the problem that we attacked. And we recognized that for us to be able to explain to our clients what we do, we truly had to understand it first and explain it in a way that anybody could understand it, right? That any employee could have Thanksgiving dinner with their aunt and be able to explain what we do. And that was really the main challenge. I think we've cracked it, and I'll tell you what we do. We're a global financial services company. We manage money, we move it, and we keep it safe. And we do that for $50 trillion of assets. We do that across the financial life cycle. That's 20% of the world's assets, by the way. That's the simplest explanation of what we do. Now, when we explain that to our clients, their eyes open up. And they realize, okay, you've mostly done the keep it safe with us. Tell me more about the managing it and moving it. And so it's allowed us to start to open many conversations again with clients who like us and are now a little bit more open to doing more with us because they can actually understand how we can help them and the problems that we solve.
I want you to talk about, again, a real fundamental thing. Why is that important?
Sure.
That all of your employees can explain to their aunt at Thanksgiving dinner what you do, because you went through that quickly, and I agree with you, but there are a lot of people who I think don't give that the priority and the focus and the attention it needs to get. So could you talk a bit about why this is so important to you and the company and what difference it's making as you do that?
Well, I'll share this again, a little bit of a lesson from my previous life. When employees are proud of where they work, good things happen. Mm-hmm. And frankly, we do a lot of hard things every single day as a company, right? You have to you're building, like we talked all about all the building that we're doing here. But when employees understand why they're doing it and why it's important, and then can go home and talk to their kids about what they're doing and why it's important, then we create pride, we create glow, and we create commitment. So I'd say that's the first thing. The second thing is, how could we explain to our clients what we do if we can't even explain it to ourselves? And frankly, we have had a number of silos within our company. We need our employees to connect the dots amongst themselves. You know, we want people who are agile, who see problems and run to them, but you have to understand your business thoughtfully and be able to connect those dots in order to be able to do that. So that's another important piece, so that they don't have to rely on senior people three levels up, but they can actually see those connections and see those opportunities and see those solutions themselves. So it's really important fundamental work for that reason.
What would you say is the key to success for today's CMO? If you said data, you wouldn't be the only one. At Deloitte, however, we believe data is only half of the equation. The other half, story. Because data is the language of business, but story is the language of humans. And we believe the most successful CMOs know how to harness the power of both data and story. To learn more about Deloitte's CMO program and how we can help today's CMOs succeed, visit cmo.deloitte.com.
What's been your learning in getting that done? I mean, what if you can get a little bit tactical here, you know, has it been some kind of communications? Has it been rituals you have with your employees? Has it been workshops you have done? I mean, you're well into this journey and you're making progress. We're going to talk about your employee engagement in a minute because I've seen the numbers. But what's been your learning in getting that done so that everyone understands, feels proud, feels committed, and does great work on behalf of your clients and customers and company?
Well, I'll tell you, Jim, we're at the very beginning of that journey. We have completed the work. We're starting to roll it out. But there are a couple of things that are important. I think one is, and this is a little tricky to say to, you know, to a marketer, to an audience of marketers, but it's not a brand exercise. It's truly an internal exercise that is meant to help us unpack what we do every single day and why it's important. And that was important to us. We didn't want it to feel as though it was a cosmetic exercise. This was very much an inside-out exercise in human speak, in practical terms, so that when we actually did go out and explain it to employees, it would seem really obvious and natural. We just found easy words to explain what we do. So we have quite a bit of work ahead of us. I will say that this is where the 240th anniversary celebrations come in. The 240th anniversary gives us a really convenient opportunity to help tell the story to employees and help connect the dots between where we've been and where we're going and what they do every day, as it does with our clients and other stakeholders, government regulators, et cetera, et cetera.
You have been there about 2.5 years. You have, I think, something like 250 people in your organization or your remit. And I saw these numbers somewhere, but your employee engagement over the last couple of years has really significantly gone up. So you've talked a bit about this already, but what could others learn from you in taking a, you know, reasonably large organization and significantly impacting their level of commitment, engagement, energy for their job and their company?
Well, I'll say this, Jim. I think there are some things our leadership team and the marketing and communications group have done really well. And frankly, some things that we could stand to improve. What we have done and what I'm proud of is that we have helped our team break the bounds of traditional financial services marketing. And hopefully, if my team were listening today, they'd say, I'm doing things today that I didn't do 2, 3, 4 years ago. And frankly, things that I didn't expect I'd be doing working for a financial services company. At the same time, just like in startups, there are growing pains. There are growing pains. There's a lot of change. And in this case, it's not just change within my organization, but a lot of change across the company. And our function sits at the center of so much of it. We run communications programs internally, externally. We run go-to-market strategies. We run all sorts of programs and initiatives that touch everything we do. We're the front, the tip of the spear. And so not only do we have our own change to deal with, we're digesting the change that our colleagues are dealing with. And so I think that's an opportunity, how to help our teams digest that change and feel consistency and trust and stability through that change. And that's what I'm concentrating on now.
You talked about sort of changing the way you do marketing communication in a financial services institution, people saying they're doing things they couldn't imagine they would have been doing a couple of years ago. How do you manage that? How do you manage that change? How do you get people feeling excited about the future and yet confident they can do it? Because I think so many people are in that situation. You're building new capabilities. You're trying different things. Things are changing in your company, outside your company. You have to adapt. You have to do things in a different way. How do you lead people through that?
Most of our team is really excited to learn, and they're really excited to dive in. And so we've been trying to create opportunities for folks to grow their skills. For example, a few years ago, we weren't doing quite as much digital marketing. Now, my aim is for us to have a best-in-class, B2B, technology-driven, go-to-market experience. And so folks are learning some of those tactics and some of those best practices. So, and in some cases, they're learning. In some cases, we bring some folks in from the outside to help teach so that we can move a little bit more quickly. Mm-hmm. But I think most importantly, what I hope is that people see this organization as a place to learn and a place to grow. And we've got a brand accelerator. We stood up because we had some newer, earlier in career folks who wanted to raise their hands and say, I'd like to do more. I'd like to try new things. And I'd say the last thing, Jim, is I'd like to take a page from my experience at American Express, where we move pretty regularly into very different roles. And the best practice there was, when you step into a new role, you're bringing 50% of the stuff that you know and 50% of the stuff that you learn. And so hopefully folks see that we're trying to adopt that here as well.
I heard you speak a bit earlier in the year, in 2024, about success this year for you and your team were four things: building stronger brand equity, improving clients' understanding of your company, doubling your client relationships, and seeing employees glow when they talk about the company. So four beautiful goals. And I'd just like you to reflect. I know we're still early in the year as we record this, but of those four things, what are you most happy about and why? And what would you like to see move faster, better of those four things and why?
I'm really excited to see how empowering it is for us to put a few interesting things out into the world, and how empowering it is for employees who are grabbing onto them and actually making it their own. I'm excited that we're helping people be excited, right? So the little things that we're doing for the 240th anniversary, I'll give you a small example. We put like big block sculptures in our lobbies in a few different office locations, and employees are sitting down on that sign with their teams, taking photos and posting to LinkedIn.
Yeah.
You know, again, a little bit of a goofy thing, but people are making it their own. And it's really gratifying to see little things that we do just being grabbed by people and creating almost like a track for them to just show their pride and their excitement for what they're doing. So I'd say, you know, that's feeling good. And frankly, I also really appreciate how engaged our executive team, our executive committee is in the storytelling that we're doing. Frankly, I'll also say that I think it's important to note that what we're doing is just creating the package around the stuff that's already happening within the company, right? We've got our sales teams going out, paying off how we're being more for our clients, our executive committee, our CEO and whatnot. So that's great. And then I'd say that just like with many other companies, where I hope we can accelerate a little bit over the course of this year is in digital. Mm-hmm. in being able to meet our clients where they are in digital channels and our go-to-market strategies and just make those work a little harder. It's really important to me to demonstrate our contribution to pipeline and sales wins. And I think there's more that we can do there. I think our team does as well. So we're really excited to dig into that.
How do you help people be better storytellers? As I've run into this with lots of different companies and leaders, we talk about that word a lot, but I don't think we stop to think about, you know, we're all telling stories every day. Stories motivate change, stories engage people, stories foster commitment. And yet a lot of people aren't natively good at that or inherently good at that. And I think it is a skill that, where you can get better. What have you learned about building a company of better storytellers? You have used that word a few times already.
At least here at BNY Mellon, it's maybe a little bit easier because we have a story to build from. Mm-hmm. 240 years of resilience, of innovation. And I'd say that our executive committee does a really great job of modeling storytelling. So many of them are active on LinkedIn. Our comms team is really great at helping them tell a really strong enterprise story. They put a lot of work into making sure that our team is thoughtfully on message. So I think there's a lot of process and discipline that goes into good storytelling. And then I'd say that we have some compelling leaders who are authentic and are open mm-hmm. to sharing their yeah. stories and connecting the dots between who they are and what they do and why they do it mm-hmm. and the company story. So I think it's a really great question. I think we've got more to do there. And I also think that we've kind of implemented some of the bones that will help us get there faster. I will say that we're really working hard to engage all levels of leadership and employees in storytelling. We've got our hashtag Life at BNY Mellon social media program. And so we really encourage our employees to really show what life is like here every single day. That helps with recruiting. It helps in our ecosystem really show that story. So we're working on it. And more to do, but I think we're off to a good start.
Last question before the creative brief. You have worked many years in financial services. It is a really big category and lots of companies. It's very crowded. How do you build a differentiated brand in financial services? And do you think the principles apply to lots of other categories, or there's something unique about financial services?
I think of us as a challenger brand. Again, like I said, people know that we've been around, mm-hmm. but we're really trying to help people see us in a different light. My aim is to do that quickly so that we can help soften the ground for business. So what that means is we have to take some thoughtful risks. And you're seeing us as a financial services brand take those risks in the way that we show up. And that's simply because I need people to quickly see there's something different going on here. Is that relevant in other places? I will say that this is what I do. Whether it was my very first startup, my second startup, or my third startup, or now my fourth, BNY Mellon isn't a startup, but my fourth, right, as CMO, we're really trying to establish ourselves. You know, in the past, in these other companies that might have been creating a new category, in this case, establishing ourselves as something different in an existing category. And I do think those levers can be used in lots of different ways. And I do appreciate the fact that our CEO and executive committee gives us the permission to run at problems and take risks in a way that allows us to break conventions and be seen in a different light.
Could you give us an example of a smart risk you're taking?
Well, if you take a look at the brand refresh that we implemented about, 9 months ago, it's fairly unusual to have a GSIP, you know, one of the six, seven most important banks in the country, show up in colors like pink, yellow, mm-hmm. cyan. Our look and feel is distinctly different And I would say that's a really good example of a smart risk that we took. We're very thoughtful about making sure that we appear trusted and secure. And that is one of our core brand characteristics. At the same time, we were really looking to push on the characteristics of modern and innovative. And that refresh, again, has allowed our clients to see us who we are a little bit more fully.
How do you know you're making progress?
I'm pleased to say that in our first 18 months or so, we saw brand equity increase by 8 points.
That's big.
And that's actually while we reduced our operational costs by about 15%. So earned media is a big part of our strategy. I talk about that a lot. We're a big bank with a small budget. So we have to be really thoughtful about the levers. And again, doing these things that allow us to break through and get people to see us in a different light. We've got much more work to do. We certainly see a lot more opportunity, and I'm excited about it. And again, this is where the 240th anniversary comes in. We're really thoughtful about the investments that we make and really thoughtful about earned media and really amplifying, using our employees to help us amplify within our ecosystem as well.
Let's flip into the creative brief. You have 3 kids, 2 dogs, and a commute between the East and West Coast. How do you make it all work?
First off, there is no world where you can do it all, at least for me. So there are a few things that are important to me. My family, my work, and sleep. Mm-hmm. I think those things are all super important. And I also try to squeeze in a little bit of exercise while I'm at it. But those are really my primary focuses. And I really don't think it's possible to do more than a small number of things really, really well. And I'll also say that having a partner who is able to help take care of our family when I'm not here in California is also really helpful. So there's some fundamentals mm-hmm. that allow me to be successful and contribute in the way that I'd like.
Do you have any habits or rituals that help you operationalize those things that are important to you into your daily life?
And I'm sure you're the same way, Jim, right? When you're super busy, you have to be really purposeful mm-hmm. about how you spend your time. One of the things that I like to do is I like to create a priorities Tuesday. And I aim to really only schedule meetings on my top priorities. That way I know that at least 20% of my time is going to be decked against the things that are most critical to move forward. So I kind of force that. And I'd say that, you know, I keep lists. I'm really, you know, I'd like to start the week knowing what I need to get done and how I need to move things forward. And frankly, I'll say, Jim, it also ties into an ethos here at BNY Mellon. It's not just about having great ideas and building great cultures, but it's really about execution. And so I think every day about how I'm going to help my team execute and drive outcomes. So again, I'd like to keep lists. You know, it helps me to freak out in some kind of order.
Yeah, no, I get it. Me too. I've heard you say that you feel the top marketer of a company and probably any senior executive needs to be an evangelist. And I'm quoting you on that for the company or leave. Why is that such a strong conviction? And what sort of leaders have inspired that belief in you?
If I, given where I sit and everything that I see, I'd say that as the marketer, it's not just a responsibility, it's the way I feel. And Jim, I think, again, coming into this role, I needed to know that I could connect to the story. And I think about that before I take any role. Can I sell this story? Can I put my heart behind it? Mm-hmm. And frankly, I'd say this for anyone. If your heart isn't in it, then you shouldn't be doing it, whether you're the CMO or regardless of what role you have. And I'd say here, my heart is really in it because I think we have a uniquely compelling opportunity. Frankly, we help pioneer the modern financial system, and we're continuing to play a really important role. You know, you could say that we help money work for the world. We help money make money work for the world. And so for that reason, it's a real honor to be working for a company that is as important to our society, helped mm-hmm. contribute to the making of America. By the way, fun fact, I don't know if you caught this in previous conversations, we're actually the oldest company in New York City as well. And yeah, so amazing. It's one of the reasons why one of our celebrations is actually going to be, we've got an Icons of New York celebration coming up with our clients in May. And we have an opportunity to really, again, demonstrate all that we've helped build together. So it's a real point of pride, not just for myself, but hopefully for my team and for all of our employees around the world.
When you're coaching someone or giving them advice, could be an employee or a friend, and they don't feel they're an evangelist for their organization or their company, how do you help them through that? I mean, because there are two ways you can go, right? What would it take to be an evangelist? And if you just can't see yourself doing that, you know, I guess you leave, but there's lots of practical considerations as well. So how do you coach people through it?
Look, the evangelism part, I think, comes at the end. You have to see yourself in a place where you can thrive, where you can contribute, a little bit of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right?
Yeah.
So you've got that stuff across the bottom, and evangelism comes at the end. I think when you know that you're contributing, when you know that you're adding value, you know that you're trusted, you know that you can grow, you know that you're valued. And so hopefully, you know, I guess what I'd like to think is that I can get people to see themselves in that way and in a way that lines up with their own purpose. And I think another consideration, though, is, are you doing what you want to be doing? Are you learning what you want to be learning? I think ultimately I'd focus on those things, knowing that when you consider those aspects and solve those questions, answer those questions, that's when you really become an evangelist. And frankly, I think it's a big reason why I'm an evangelist here. Not only do I see the story, but, you know, as I said earlier, our team is contributing to the company that we're going to be. I get to see myself in many of the decisions that we make. I think our team does as well. And that feels good. That makes me proud. And hopefully it makes our team proud as well. I tell my team, there isn't a single thing. I'm hard pressed. I'm sure there is, but I'm hard pressed to think of a single thing we've done as a company that hasn't involved our small but mighty 250 person organization. And so when you're making a difference, especially to a company that's making a difference, then, you know, that feels good.
What's the first brand you remember making an impact on you as a young girl?
Benetton. They were the first brand that was inclusive enough to represent me. And growing up in the 80s, when fashion and beauty images were fairly homogenous, they were able to glamorize inclusivity and belonging. And I think for that reason, it was before its time. The other thing that I, you know, learned from a brand like Benetton is, you know, you can really make an impact by doing things differently. And that's something that, you know, I still mm-hmm. hold dear to my heart and is part of my ethos.
It's been a long time since you lived in Canada. What do you miss most?
Am I allowed to say the poutine?
Yes, you can go there.
I'd say my family. But again, I am really grateful to be here in the States where there is so much opportunity. And I tell my kids, the world has changed, but you can be whatever you imagine. And especially growing up, you know, I grew up as an adult in New York. You mm-hmm. can be really great at color and yeah. make a great career out of it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, again, whether now I think the world has opened up, tech has helped that happen. You can kind of be anything you imagine anywhere in this world.
Yeah, for sure. Who's been the most inspiring person in your life?
I think my father. Both my parents were immigrants. You naturally have that immigrant mentality, the hardworking, you know. But I think my father in particular saw something in me early on and just taught me how to believe in myself.
What brought them to Canada?
They were originally from the Middle East, from Egypt. And mm-hmm. so a better life for themselves and their kids.
That's a good spot to end on. So thank you for this conversation, Natalie. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Full of lessons, by the way, and I think great lessons on the power of marketing and brand management in an organization. And I think on the power of multiple experiences that build our career and build who we are as people and who we are as leaders.
Thanks, Jim. It was really fun chatting with you.
That was my conversation with Natalie Sunderland. Three takeaways from this one for your business brand and life. The first one is curiosity about clients and customers. I just loved how Natalie talked about this lesson she learned at American Express. Whatever they were thinking about, they always, always asked, what will the implication be for those who carry our card? I love that simplicity. We had that, by the way, at Procter & Gamble. You always ask about the implication for the consumer, a great lesson on leadership. Second takeaway, the power of pride in your company. Natalie talked about how important it is for employees to be able to tell the story of the company, feel proud in it, which leads to engagement, which leads to creativity, which leads to commitment to clients and to the company. And the third takeaway is, this is a company that's 240 years old this year. They understand their history. They respect their history. They learn from their history, but they're not constrained by it. They actually use it as a platform to expand and innovate in new and differentiated areas. I love how they balance their history with the future. That was my last conversation for Women's History Month. Natalie was the fourth woman we have had on this month. We had Laura from Deloitte, we had Data from Xerox, we had Jill from HR Block, and now Natalie at BNY Mellon. One thing we can learn from all these remarkable women is how they have learned from other great leaders that have influenced them, and they've applied those lessons and those learnings to pay it forward. We all have the opportunity to mentor and coach amazing people every day. Let's make the most of that. I hope you had a great Women's History Month. See you next time.
That's it for this episode of the CMO Podcast. If you found this helpful and entertaining, I would be so grateful if you could share our show with your friends. And I would be super happy if you subscribed so you can be updated as we publish new episodes. And if you really want to help, leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The CMO Podcast is a Gallery Media Group original production. Episodes of the CMO Podcast are produced by Gallery Media Group. The views and opinions expressed by podcast speakers and guests are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of our sponsors or its personnel, nor do our sponsors advocate or endorse any individuals or entities featured on the episodes.